This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
On his first day of hearing, Kenya's Supreme Court agreed to a request from Raila Odinga and his running mate, Martha Karua, to recount presidential ballot papers from 15 polling stations in four counties.
That's reporter Mohammed Yusuf on appeals of the results of Kenya's presidential election vote. Details coming up also. At least eight people are dead due to flooding and mudslides in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Madagascar, at least 19 people have died and 21 injured when police opened fire on a crowd that tried to storm a police station to attack suspected criminals. Reuters says the disturbance took place in the town of Ikongo, about 330 kilometers southeast of the capital, Antananarivo. The incident began when a mob tried to reach four people accused of kidnapping an albino child and kidnapping his mother. The police say calm has been restored and those who were killed in the shooting have been offered financial compensation. The child has not been found. In some parts of Africa, people with albinism, a congenital disorder leading to a lack of skin pigmentation, are killed for their body parts, which are believed to bring wealth and good luck. The UN says in sub-Saharan Africa, as many as 1 in 5,000 people have the condition. Angola's Electoral Commission yesterday declared the MPLA, which has retained power for nearly 50 years since independence, the winner of last week's national election, giving President João Lourenço a second term amid allegations of fraud. The commission reported the ex-Marxist People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, had a 51.17% majority after all votes were counted. Its longtime opponent, the National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, or UNITA, received 43.95%, its best result ever. Former U.S. Ambassador to the Great Lakes region, J. Peter Pham, a distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council, says UNITA also gained a significant number of parliamentary seats.
Constitutional change cannot occur now on simply the basis of the governing party. The governing party will have to reach consensus with at least some, if not UNITA, some of the smaller parties within that not also obtain seats. It also gives them, given the nature, they're going to have to be, the governing party is going to have to be on its game if it hopes to win again in 5 years. And UNITA is in a very strong position to show itself as a credible opposition party. So I think it's ultimately the people of Angola have spoken, and absent evidence of massive irregularities, which we have not seen anyone produce, I think it's a win ultimately for the Angolan people, who now have an opportunity for a more rigorous debate within government and yet at the same time continuity.
What's the process that follows if Junior does lodge a complaint with the commission?
Well, the next step is to the courts, and the Constitutional Court ultimately has the ultimate say. It has to rule within, so the next 72 hours, from what I understand of the Angolan Constitution, next 72 hours are the window for appeals and adjudication. It's a fairly tight schedule. So, if there is any evidence, it should be brought forward and heard. And a peaceful atmosphere, I think, is in the interest of everyone. But I think ultimately the Angolan people, I was just there 2 months ago, the Angolan people have spoken, and it's now, I think, all parties to respect their verdict and to move on to see how this country can advance itself and become the regional leader that it has every potential of being.
That was J. Peter Pham, a former U.S. ambassador to the Great Lakes region and a distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam. At least 8 people are confirmed dead and several injured after torrential downpours caused mudslides and flooding in parts of Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Eric Kawa gives us more on the details.
Tragic images of flooding and a horrific mudslide. Not just homes, but roads, bridges, and other infrastructure were badly hit. This describes the scenes of Sunday, August 28th, in parts of Freetown. According to the Sierra Leone Meteorological Agency, more rains are expected over the next few days. The scenes recall August 14, 2017. That's when flash floods and a landslide with the regent area on the outskirts of Freetown being the hardest hit. 5 years after the tragedy, heavy downpours and a mudslide at Looking Town, a community located on the hillside of Freetown neighborhood of Kisii, left 6 people dead and others injured. Videos show people trapped in the mud while others were rescued. Looking Town was not the only area affected last weekend, so were Culvert, Mount Orel, Canningal, Donda Street and Krube. The National Disaster Management Agency said at least 8 people, including 7-year-old, are confirmed dead, with rescue efforts still underway. Mohammed Lamran Aba is the Director of Communications at the agency.
We have trained our CBMCs, you know, that is the community-based volunteers, in all of those areas. So they are drawing our attention to inimical activities, for example, by certain people who are constructing houses where they should not construct houses. So we want to ensure that we stop, because the problem has been there for ages. The issue about urban planning, the issue about building codes and issuance of building permits and all of that, and people building beyond demarcated zones, has been there for the longest time.
Ba continues to explain that the entire community of Culvert was inundated, forcing people to evacuate their homes, with the Ross Road police station serving as temporary accommodation. Benjamin Charles Spencer is one of the area's youth that helped in the rescue operation.
The water had reached to a certain point, we will not be able to save, say, we go inside
water. Water had reached a certain peak that we weren't able to get in. So we mobilized as young people and made a roadway on top of the roofs to evacuate residents. We're in dire need of medical attention. The rain affected and polluted the waters, and some people are sick due to the heavy winds. Everyone in the community needs medical attention. We need a drainage system in this community to help the proper flow of water.
The water they come in, they settle within the community, and the more they settle in the community.
Krube is another hard-hit community with recurring floods every year. Augusta Savage, together with her husband and children, survived the disaster.
Not easy. I wake from 4 o'clock.
It was not easy. I woke up at 4 a.m. local time, and it was raining heavily. I was continuously watching the sea level as they were rising. I woke my husband up, notifying him of the rising sea levels that might cause problems. A lady came by and advised me to evacuate the children, but I was afraid that they might get trapped in the flood.
She wants to be relocated, but doesn't have the upper hand, as she laments most houses are expensive and must be paid for with dollars. Pa Alemami Kathebe II is one of the chiefs in the Krube community. He says relocation is not the best option now, as there are over 20,000 inhabitants in the area.
The shorter way of helping the people here is by embanking the waterway. This waterway is responsible for the circulation of the water in this community. The government knows this has been affecting the community.
Chief Alamami says the problem is that drainage systems were built in colonial days to control the flow of water, and no government has worked to maintain them. Scientists attribute the rains and flooding to climate change caused by human activity. Relief officials urge the international community to help fund African countries like Sierra Leone in their efforts to cope with the challenge. Eric Kawa reporting for VOA Africa.
Kenya's Supreme Court has ordered the recount of ballots cast at 15 polling stations during the August 9th presidential election. The order was one of several issued today as the court began hearing a challenge to the win of President-elect William Ruto. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
On his first day of hearing, Kenya's Supreme Court agreed to a request from Raila Odinga and his running mate, Martha Karua, to recount presidential ballot papers from 15 polling stations in four counties, Kericho, Nandi, Nyandarua, and Mombasa. The first three counties voted heavily for President-elect William Ruto in the August 9th election, while Mombasa residents voted mainly for Odinga. Judges say the recounts must be done within 48 hours. The court also told Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, the IEBC, to provide the official voter registries and some election-related equipment for examination. Chief Justice Martha Koome said, looking at the arguments submitted by Odinga and his lawyers, the judges will be ruling on several questions.
The first issue, the technology deployed by IEBC for the conduct of the 2022 general elections met the standards of integrity, verifiability, security and transparency to guarantee accurate and verifiable results. Issue number two, whether there was interference with the uprounding and transmission of Forms 34A from the polling stations to the IEBC public portal. Issue number three, whether there was a difference between Forms 34As uprounded on the IEBC public portal and Forms 34As received at the National Tallying Center and Forms 34As issued to the agents at the polling stations.
Form 34A is a form signed at local polling stations after vote counts are completed. Once signed, the form is transmitted to the National Tally Center to be included in the presidential vote totals. The Supreme Court will also examine whether there were discrepancies between the total votes cast for the presidential candidates and for other electoral positions like the governors and senators. The judges will also examine whether Ruto got more than 50% of the vote, the standard needed to avoid a runoff, and whether there were irregularities and illegalities in the counting process that could affect the results. Odinga is challenging the official election results that saw him lose by a small margin. Ruto got 7.1 million votes, while Odinga got 6.9 million. The Odinga camp believes the election was rigged in favor of Ruto, allegedly with the help of some electoral officers and IEBC chairperson Wafula Chebukati, a claim the chairman denied. After the vote count was completed, Chebukati declared Ruto to be the winner, but four of the seven commissioners publicly disowned the results, citing issues with counting process. In Tuesday's hearing, lawyers from the opposing camps clashed over who had the right to represent IEBC, despite the court saying it would admit the arguments of all the commissioners. The electoral commissioners have made individual submission to the court, a move that legal experts say will likely weaken any attempts to defend how the IEBC conducted the electoral process. Hearings are expected to continue until Friday. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In video that Reuters News released yesterday, Raila Odinga said he is convinced he won the election, but if the court rules otherwise, he will respect the ruling. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. C South Sudan is taking one small step towards full implementation of the country's 2018 revitalized peace agreement when it graduates the first group of a unified army today. President Salva Kiir announced a national holiday and urged citizens to attend the ceremony. The revitalized agreement calls for parties to train and graduate a unified army during the transitional period, but the government has fallen behind many times, prompting the United States to pull out of the monitoring process in July this year, citing lack of sustained progress. Michael Makwi is South Sudan's Minister of Information. He tells VOA's James Butty, the graduation is important to the people of South Sudan because it marks the actual implementation of the 2018 revitalized peace agreement.
This day is a very important day in the history of the people of South Sudan and the people of South Sudan because this marks the actual implementation of the agreement. So all the people, those who are here in Juba, are expected to attend, and all those who are outside Juba are expected to follow through the media. It is important because this is the day the people of South Sudan has been longing for, and this is why the president declared Tuesday as a public holiday so that people can attend.
But there are many South Sudanese who are asking why this day has taken this long to come.
Even though people were suspicious and accusing the government of South Sudan of dragging its feet and that it did not have the stamina and does not have the interest to implement the agreement, it is important now that we show those who were doubting the government of South Sudan or those doubting Thomases that the government of South Sudan meant to implement the agreement, except that it had some obstacles. Those obstacles are the ones that brought about the delay. Not because the government of South Sudan did not intend or does not have the interest to implement the agreement. Now the day has come, we have made it, and this is why they are being graduated Tuesday, the 30th of August.
As you know, Minister, the U.S. government withdrew its support from the peace implementation process earlier this year, citing lack of sustained progress. Your comment, please.
The withdrawal of the Americans from supporting the process. In fact, the Americans were supporting the security mechanisms within the agreement. And despite their withdrawal, which was about 2 months ago, we managed to go through and we have now succeeded and we are graduating the forces without their support. However, they said that they will look into it, and up to now, we have not yet received their response. The reasons for the withdrawal, of course, are their own reasons. But what I know is that Americans are not signatories to the agreement. They have not signed it. They are members of Troika. Troika did not sign. The European Union did not sign. And the Prince of IGAD did not sign. But despite all these, they decided to come in to support the agreement. Now, the fact that they have pulled out from that support is not an issue. There are other good Samaritans who had offered to continue supporting the implementation of the agreement, and we have made it. As for the absence of the election law, that is not an excuse, actually, because it is not only the election law which is the problem. The problem is that the constitution itself is not yet out. How do you talk of elections at a time when your constitution is not yet out? And this is why the people of South Sudan have agreed to extend the period of implementation further so that we give chance for the proper formulation and drafting of the constitution of the Republic of South Sudan. And it is thereafter that you can talk about the election law.
That was Michael Makwi, South Sudan's Minister of Information, speaking with VOA's James Butty. The South African government says thousands of Zimbabwean migrants are causing its health system to buckle. Years of political and economic instability in Zimbabwe, plus its failure to maintain and develop basic services such as health, have forced its people to seek medical care in neighboring countries. The crisis has been highlighted by cell phone footage of a senior South African health official scolding a Zimbabwean woman for seeking care in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports.
The central figure in the video that's gone viral across Southern Africa is Poppy Ramatuba. She's the MEC, or Health Minister, of the closest South African province to Zimbabwe, Limpopo. Accompanied by nurses and doctors, Ramatuba looms over the bed of a young Zimbabwean woman who's just had surgery at a public hospital in the town of Bela Bela.
You speak Shona, and then how do you find yourself in Bela Bela when you are supposed to be with Munangagwa there? You know he doesn't give me money to operate you guys, and I'm operating you with my limited budget.
Thank you so much, Rapisha.
Oh, well, you can't appreciate that. You're killing my health system. You are killing my health system. When you guys are sick, I'm hearing these days, you just say, let's cross Limpopo River. There's an MEC there who's running charity department. It's not. And I'm going to tell you something that is truthful and painful.
As the film rolls, Ramatuba accuses the woman, the victim of a car accident in Harare, of killing South Africa's health system. She says Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa should be caring for patients like her. Many South Africans, also the victims of poor healthcare delivery, are supporting Ramatuba. But many are also calling on President Cyril Ramaphosa to dismiss her for what they call cruelty. After all, the woman had to travel almost 1,000 kilometers for surgery to reconstruct her crushed legs, showing how desperate she was. Spokesperson for Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party, Kennedy Mandaza, acknowledges a lot of improvement is needed in his country's hospitals. He says he understands Ramatuba's frustration.
It is true that she's given a budget for the people that are in her constituents, but it is insensitive for an MEC to give a lecture under the circumstances that that lecture was given. There are other routes or ways that these issues could be raised.
South African opposition parties say rather than humiliating poor, disempowered Zimbabweans, senior African National Congress officials like Ramatuba should berate ZANU-PF for its failure to help its own people. The minister herself refuses to apologize.
The already overburdened healthcare system is now coming to its knees.
But, say health experts, that's because of her government's poor management and corruption, not because of a flood of migrants. Ramatuba insists illegal Zimbabweans are abusing her project to deliver high-quality healthcare to Limpopo.
This initiative, we are very selfish about it because its aim is to make sure that the people in the rural part of Limpopo to specialist care. They've been sitting for years with surgical backlog and not being attended to.
She says she was shocked to find that almost half of 5,000 operations done in her hospitals in July were performed on Zimbabweans.
They leave their country, enter South Africa illegal, come to our hospitals. The doctors who operate them, for ethical reasons, they don't refuse to operate them. But what is this thing doing? Is that very same South African whom and the Limpopo citizen whom we did this project for, it's unable to get operated because they are still flooding even our initiatives.
Ramatuba says it's time for the government of Zimbabwe to reimburse her administration for the healthcare it's giving to Zimbabweans. ZANU-PF says it'll address this issue diplomatically with its sister organization, the ANC. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Iyabaro, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.